Welcome to lesson 4 of the Mandala of Being, as we deepen into our understanding of living more completely in the present moment. Look at the mandala for a moment. Notice how the center is not the notion of me or I. That's off to the side. That's something derived by identification with our bodies when we're very young, with our sensations and feelings when we're very young. And ultimately, and then for the rest of our lives, right to this instant, with identification with the ceaseless stream of ideas about ourselves, the ways we judge ourselves, the stories we tell ourselves about how we should be or shouldn't be. With identification with those thoughts, we create this sense of me or I. And yet at the same time, if you look carefully at the mandala, you recognize that's not who I am. Who I am is the capacity to be aware of that stream of thought, to be able to step back from those thoughts, to break the habit of identification, and start my sense of self completely fresh in this moment. Pause for a moment. What do we mean by sense of self? In this moment, who I really am. Let your mind sink into the moment, present in your body. Feel your breathing. This moment is not an abstraction. It's either quite vivid, because our attention is open, our mind is spacious, and we're awake and alert. Or it's much less vivid because we're focusing on something that's pulling our awareness away from the present moment. Look around you. Slow your breathing a little bit. Imagine that the mud has been stirred up, mildly perhaps, just by identifying with the thoughts that have been coming and going in your mind. And now for a while you step back from involvement with those thoughts. You let them float through. You start to anchor your attention in your breath, in the feeling of yourself, the space of your body, the sounds, the perceptions, light, perhaps the feeling of a breeze, the immediacy of this moment. Who am I without thought? Feel that answer. Presence. Awake, alert, but calm, spacious mind. Not tense, not clenching, not grasping at the next thought. Grasping at the thing that we imagine will make us feel whole, or the grasping in a negative sense by trying to push away something we don't want to experience or feel or think. A mind that's not grasping, a mind that's not pushing away. Just experiencing yourself here and now. So this is the most important thing to understand. The felt sense, the bodily experience of spacious mind, wake, alert mind, but calm, not concentrated, not agitated. And your own body relaxed, solid, awake. You might check to see if there's any tension in your body. Make a little stretching. Adjust yourself inside to make space to relax that tension. Throughout time, this is what the adepts, the wise people, understood. That who we really are is this immediacy of now, with the mind vividly alert, present, united with its experience. But what happens when we identify with a story about ourselves? Suddenly we're thinking, I am this man who has to achieve, that needs to do more, that isn't responding as quickly as he needs to respond. And we start to get stressed. You can imagine your water bottle now. You'd pick it up with the thought, I need to be able to accomplish this very quickly, and you get stressed. I should be more aware of my children's needs, and you get stressed. You start to identify with these thoughts, and pretty soon the muddy bottle is always muddy. And that becomes a way of holding yourself, a familiar sense of stress that's so pervasive that you don't even identify it as stress. I will be talking about this in a future lesson about holding environments, how we create the same emotional setting point, default set point, again and again, by the way we tell ourselves stories about how we should be or how we shouldn't be. Of course, as soon as there's a sense of me, there's going to be a sense of you. That's the very nature of subject-object consciousness. When a baby's very young, a few months old, and you have something bright in your hand, or maybe makes noise like a little rattle, and they turn their attention to it, maybe reach toward it. So the baby notices what's in your hand, but then if you take it and put it behind your back, for a young baby, it's as if it ceases to exist. Their attention immediately locks onto something else or remains somehow unfocused. But by about 7 or 8 months old, when you take that object and hold it up in front of the baby and then put it behind your back, they know it's behind your back. They're reaching around for it. So this beginning stabilization of a baby's ability to perceive an object when it's present and when it is hidden is also the beginning of the baby's identification, more consistent identification with its own sense of self. So as the object becomes stable, so does the sense of me become stable. But it doesn't become fully stable in any of us until 5 years old or 6 years old. At that point, it's not that you've consciously chosen your sense of self. It's as if you've materialized your sense of self being determined by how your parents responded to you thousands of times in many, many different ways when you were hurting or laughing or when you were rambunctious or when you were moody. The sense of self is emerging through the mirror that they placed in front of you with their responses to you. Now it's stable. Now there's me. Then there's mommy. Then there's daddy. There's me. There's you. There's the experiencer and the experiencer. Experience. There's the thing that's known and the one that knows it. And we're into subject-object consciousness. And we're identifying with the thoughts that come, choosing those that support our sense of self and identifying with them and reinforcing them, trying to push away, disguise the thoughts that negate our sense of self or undermine our sense of self. We begin to construct a belief in who we are that we like, the way we'd like to be seen by others, the way we'd like to be seen by ourselves. We filter out the thoughts that don't support this idealized self. We reinforce the ones that do. After a while, without knowing it, we're completely lost in an unconscious process of creating ourselves over and over again, moment by moment, with the identification with these thoughts. And these thoughts are what we call in the work here me stories. Stories about ourselves, stories about how we should be or shouldn't be, stories about what we believe we need to be complete or whole as human beings, stories about who we believe ourselves to be or how we believe we should be. And this doesn't stop until we learn to bring ourselves back to the present. What did the me stories create? Well, because it's not who we really are, because every me story is either going to be an exaggeration of ourselves, a kind of grandiose, self-important image, or it's going to be a negative image of ourselves, a kind of specialness in the direction of depressiveness, our me stories create exaggeration, inflation, grandiosity, self-importance, or depressiveness, self-negation, self-doubt. That's what happens to our now. Instead of the vividness of the colors, instead of the sounds of the birds, instead of the feeling of the breeze, instead of the sense of connection and unity with your experience, the source from which comes joy and spontaneity and authenticity and fullness and deep intelligence and wisdom, instead of that, our now becomes completely colored by the stories we're telling about ourselves. And so the present moment loses its richness. It's not vivid. What's vivid is the depressive or grandiose sense of who we are, the need to call ourselves special. Well, he's maybe more attractive than I am, but I'm smarter. Oh yeah, so she's got a great body, but I'm much stronger, I'm more athletic. We tell ourselves story on story just to make sure that who we think we are is satisfying to us, or just to make sure that our suffering is unique, our problems unique to us. So this is what happens to our now when we're caught in these stories. The same thing, of course, happens to us when we believe the stories we tell about others. Now, others can be other people, and that's the most important place we can do the work. But also others can be the stories we tell ourselves about our life, the stories you're telling yourself about the course right now, the stories you tell yourself about any situation while you're in that situation, when you say, oh, this is a very bad situation, which is a judgment of the situation, which is created by thought, which makes it more difficult to be present in the ever-changing nature of reality. Some changes are rejected, so it's bad. Some changes are accepted, so they're good. We have stories about money. We have stories about our body. We have stories about health. We have stories about death. All of these are thoughts, and the only proof or validity of the thought is another thought. Yet in the present moment, when you really are present for another person, something happens that's energetic, that's alive, that's vibrant. When you're really present for the environment that you're in, it starts to become part of who you are. It starts to give you a sense of belonging and connection and fullness. So moment by moment in our bodies, we can recognize this connection to the now, or the dimming and diminishing of the vividness of the immediacy of our experience as we fill it with instead with the emotion that comes from judging someone. When it says in Scripture, don't judge others or you'll be judged, all it means is that when you judge someone by saying something like, he doesn't really understand me, that thought creates stress. You're shaking up your bottle of mud. It's you that becomes tense. It's you that becomes angry. It's you that becomes bitter. This is what happens to all of us until we wake up and realize that we would like to be experiencing another from a place inside of us that's starting all over right now, not determined by me stories, not reacting and being determined by the stories about other people. An ability to appreciate someone as he or she really is. An ability to live in life and see things as they really are. So, the work is to make the stories conscious, to see what we're doing with our mind in the ways we judge other people, in the ways we judge our bodies, in the ways we expect others to be different, in the ways we expect a situation to be different than the way it actually is. By making these stories, these you stories, conscious, by the power of awareness, we have distance from them. You can think of yourself in the third person. He's judging now. He's really dissatisfied with how things are. You get some distance from yourself. You begin to see that what happens to you by believing these stories about others, about your life. You begin to settle the mud and start again from the present moment. This work is very much a work that you have to recognize in your body. Who you are when you believe a story about someone else. Who you are when you're present with that person in the nowness of yourself without those stories. Who you are when you have a judgment about your career that makes you unhappy. Who you are when you're fully involved and engaged at work without your mind going into story. Who you are when you start at the beginning of yourself.